So what would you say to those who are on the sidelines right now that have not, they've want, they know that what they have is true and beautiful and unique, but they just don't know how to get the ball rolling. They don't know how to get these conversations started.
Yeah.
What would you say to encourage those people?
I would start with 2 Corinthians 13:5 that says, test yourself.
So I'm speaking today with Tyler, and Tyler recently gave a TED Talk, Tyler Ellis, and it's gone viral now. And you know, I saw the TED Talk. As soon as I saw it, I thought, man, we got to have this guy on and talk to him about, you know, his journey sharing Christ with people of different backgrounds, non-believers, Easterners, and just all kinds of different backgrounds. So I was excited to have him on, and I will link up his TED Talk to this video so that you can find it. So if you're listening, please check this out. It's a really good talk. It's about a 15-minute presentation on just how to share the gospel with people of all different backgrounds. And also, it's very easy and simple the way that Tyler approaches sharing the gospel. And most of it, a lot of it, is asking questions and a lot of things that we've talked about here on the podcast. So I'm glad to have you on, and I really appreciate you taking some time out to join us.
Thank you, Clark. It's a privilege.
Absolutely. Well, why don't you kick us off with just telling listeners a little bit more about your background, and then, you know, the things that led up to your TED Talk that's now kind of hitting the internet.
Yes. Well, I grew up in church like a lot of people in our country, and it was a good experience. I'm grateful for, but I also kind of missed Jesus in my upbringing. And then I did this mission work overseas for about 2 years. And it wasn't until after I came back at the age of about 21 that I had a mentor sit down with me over coffee and help me see that I had not trusted Jesus, that I've been appealing to my own good works, trying to be good enough, trying to have all the right answers, win the arguments. And man, I was bitter at first. It's like, how can this happen? And then it turned into appreciation. And I realized, hey, this is just the process of owning your faith. I mean, if there's something we can do now, especially me as a parent of three daughters, to help my kids, you know, probably my driving scripture is just another way of saying the Great Commission is Hebrews 12:15. It says, see to it that no one misses the grace of God. And so I had missed it. After I got my bachelor's degree at a little Bible college up in Lubbock, and I wanted to be a missionary. And then a church asked me to start a campus ministry. I said, no, that would compromise my desire, you know, to reach the nations. And then I prayed and read and talked to campus ministers, and I discovered there's a million international students in our country. And so, I thought campus ministry is not a compromise of reaching the nations. It's actually a strategic way to do that. And so I did campus ministry almost 15 years, rubbed shoulders with a lot of students from all over the world, a lot of worldviews, and lots of students came to Christ. I learned a lot, you know, getting asked a question that no one's ever asked you before. It helps you have a more solid faith.
Yeah.
And so now I work for a nonprofit called Let's Start Talking. I'm the associate director of what we call Friends Speak. And so we help campus ministries and churches start programs where they reach out to international students and refugees in our country. Half of them have come from what's called the 1040 window, where most people who've never heard of Jesus are today, so places we'd have a hard time going if we wanted to.
Yeah.
And so the way Friends Speak works is we set up one-on-one reading sessions with people who are wanting to improve their English, and we read the Bible. So anyone can do it. It's so awesome to see people who never shared their faith and they felt guilty because they're not doing anything with the Great Commission.
Yeah.
And now they can right where they live. So yeah. I love what I do.
Yeah, you know, that's powerful because our campuses, you know, there's so many different cultures coming to learn and coming together, and there's so many people of different walks of life. And so, like you said, I mean, it's great that we have missionaries, and I'm thankful that we have people that are going traveling abroad. But right here in America, in North America, you know, is a great opportunity, a great window to share the gospel with a multitude of people from different backgrounds. So I really like what you're doing. What was that nonprofit organization again that you're a part of?
Yeah, it's called Let's Start Talking. You can find it at lst.org. So yeah. That's the name of the nonprofit. It's 40 years old this year. And we also send teams overseas, all over the world, to do that same strategy, 2 to 6 weeks. I just got back from Seoul, South Korea for 2 weeks. And so that's, we call it LST when we go overseas as well. But Friends Speaks, what we do here in the U.S.
Amazing, man. Well, that's great. That's phenomenal. Yeah, I saw your talk, and you know, obviously, the talk in itself is great. I would definitely encourage people to go listen to it. But could you just kind of, in a nutshell, tell us a little bit about the journey that you cover in your TED talk? Because I know you went on sort of a personal journey with these conversations. So tell us a little bit about that for those who haven't heard the talk just yet.
Sure. So, you know, being on campus for so long, seeing students from all over the world, just really wanting to find a good and effective way to first be their friend and help them. You know, FriendSpeak helps them with their English, so that's awesome. But I didn't do that back then. I wish I had known about it. But also just helping them when they come to our country, if they're internationals, they expect to learn about Christianity. But also there's people on every campus from like all 50 states. Hmm. So it's kind of like Pentecost, where Acts chapter 2, verse 5, it says people came from every nation under heaven to Jerusalem. And it was very strategic. And so the college campus is a parallel to that. But so I figured out that all these clubs on campus, they're, you know, have a link on their school website, and it lists the name and email of the officers of those clubs. So I just started emailing the officers, presidents of Engineers Without Borders, the Rubber Chickens Drama Club, the Vegetarian Club, and invited them out for coffee. Said, hey, can I treat you for coffee? I got 20 questions, about take an hour. I'm just going to listen, and then I'm going to draw your picture. So I'm an artist, so I do these one-line drawings where it's a continuous line. You don't take your pen off the page. And so probably like 1 out of 10 people that I invited through email said yes.
Wow.
So it was some really influential students on campus. And then I got to interview some professors as well. And so I interviewed 50 people in 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the combination of art, questions, and coffee was like three of my favorite things.
Yeah.
And so from there, I started making some big discoveries. You know, I kind of borrow Lee Strobel and Mark Middleberg's phrase, unexpected adventures. They wrote an excellent book by that title. And so I experienced some unexpected adventures from that 2 years, and also made some unexpected discoveries. And so that's what I share in the TEDx talk. I share some of those stories that surprised me, you know, friendships that were born, going on service trips, like disaster relief trips alongside my agnostic friends.
Yeah.
And, you know, a girl who was going to commit suicide calls me at 3 a.m., a girl that I had interviewed, and, you know, we were able to save her.
Wow.
And So just things like that that were super surprising and unexpected.
Yeah.
And then it led to the discoveries.
Yeah.
So one of the 20 questions I asked people was, on what basis do you believe God will or will not accept you into heaven? And that's one of those questions you kind of expect from like a street preacher or something. And people yeah. kind of cringe at it. You know, why are Christians always just talking about, are you going to heaven or hell if you died right now? But you know what I found, Clark, was when you ask that question and you're just listening. People yeah. know you're listening. You're not going to debate them. You just want to know, what do they think? Are they? And so people didn't cringe. They really opened up. You know, when you sit down for an hour and just ask 20 questions, people, like, surprisingly, they loved it.
Yeah.
They were articulating their beliefs sometimes for the first time. A lot of them kept hearing themselves say, man, that's a good question. I don't know. I don't know. I should know. Yeah. Shouldn't I? Man, this is important.
Yeah.
I had students cry during the interview.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just asking questions. And
yeah.
I wouldn't respond if they asked me questions. I would bite my tongue and say, hey, you know, we can meet up again if you want.
Yeah.
And so like 50% of the people I interviewed wanted to meet up again.
Wow.
And a lot of them wanted to interview me.
Yeah.
Which was one of those things that was unexpected, was they were like, well, man, what's your take on this stuff? And so we'd meet up again. Some of those students, we started meeting once a week for like 2 years.
Mm.
You know, one of my friends was a fourth generation atheist.
Wow.
And he was from New Jersey. And that fourth generation was on both sides of his family. So that was pretty rare, I thought. And,
yeah.
He came to Christ. You know, in fact, 25% of those people I interviewed eventually crossed the line of faith. And it was a shorter amount of time, and some was long. But so when they would ask me to meet up again, one of the I would answer questions that they would have. Questions
yeah.
like, do you believe all paths lead to God? Or how can one person's death enable another person's forgiveness? So in the TEDx talk, I share a couple illustrations that I shared with them when we had coffee together. And surprisingly, a lot of times I would get the response, like, I just understood Jesus for the first time.
Yeah.
Like, I never understood this. That totally yeah. made sense. And then I was really surprised that a lot of the people who said that were actually had been raised Christian.
Yeah.
There, a few of the people I interviewed were current Christians, church-going people. A lot of them were ex-Christians.
Mm-hmm.
But you would expect, you know, another one of my 20 questions was, what comes to mind when you think about Jesus? And, man, people were given all the right answers about who he was and what he did and details of his life, you know, claims, promises, miracles, prophecies. And but when I came down to ask those people who knew lots of stuff about Jesus, who'd been raised in church, on what basis do you believe that you will or will not be accepted into heaven? Most people, religious or irreligious, that could be summarized in this statement, our acceptance in heaven depends on our performance on earth.
Yeah.
And the Christians or the ex-Christians were not an exception to that rule, up to that thinking. And so that was really perplexing to me.
Yeah.
Like how people in the church today, and, you know, my years in campus ministry totally confirms that. It's not just this mm-hmm. denomination or that denomination, this religion or that religion. It's just people.
Yeah.
We all kind of think that way. And so, you know, people are missing Jesus. So I went back through, I was like, this is so perplexing. I got to figure this out, how we can have all this knowledge. But then when it comes down to me, what do I appeal to? You
Yeah.
know, all of a sudden, the very people, again, outside of my interviews, just I've probably asked that question to 1,000 people, church
Right.
camps, youth groups, churches, workshops, retreats, conferences. I survey with that question.
Yeah.
And usually the people who even mention the name of Jesus are in a very small minority.
Yeah.
Where they say, yes, I believe I will be in heaven with God. And the reason is what Jesus did.
Right.
Very few people even name his name.
Yeah.
They appeal to, I go to church,
yeah.
I do this, don't do that. I'm better than that guy, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I went back, I reread all 50 manuscripts, and these phrases started jumping out at me.
Yeah.
When people talked about Jesus, it was, he's a role model. He's mm-hmm. a role model. He came to show us how to get to heaven.
Yeah.
We could just follow his example, do what he said.
Right.
And it's like, that's it. That's the misconception.
Yeah.
You know, they believe in Jesus, but they're looking to him as the guy with the right answers.
Yeah.
So if we believe the right things and then follow his example, we'll make the cut. We'll
yeah.
be good enough.
Yeah.
And so that's really what the TEDx talk
yeah.
is about, in essence. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, just listening to you talk here, a few things come to mind. And number one, I think in the culture that we live in, that's such a social media online platform, the conversations about Christ divulge into so many just things that are kind of missing the point. So when you bring people together for a face-to-face conversation and you see that they, you know, haven't heard these things before, or just maybe just misunderstood the gospel or misunderstood your perspective, it just
yeah.
it brings the walls down when you're right in front of someone. And I think that's why it's important for people listening to learn from your approach. Is there's nothing wrong with saying to your friend or to your colleague at school, or, you know, hey, let's get a cup of coffee and just talk about these things. I think people really are searching for meaning and for purpose in life, more so than they may even let on. And so talking about the big questions, you know, why am I here? You know, why? What is it so unique about Christ that makes him, you know, the pathway to salvation? And why is it that Christianity is true? But having these conversations face to face brings the walls down where you can be honest about these things. And so when I was listening to your talk, you know, I took that away from the conversation. Was you also talked about how you were okay with saying, you know, maybe I don't know the answer to something, or, you know, in these conversations, it's okay to just say, I may not know the answer to that, but here's what I do know. And then also to have second and third and fourth conversations where you're meeting up with people and having these
yeah.
and building a relationship and,
yeah.
and getting to connect with the person. It's so much different than the world we live in where people are behind a keyboard and they're arguing about, you know, why Christianity is true, or, you know,
yeah.
I found that isn't as successful as building a relationship, having conversations, being honest, putting it all out there, and then also getting Christ right. You talked about this a lot, but I don't know if we as Christians always understand our sinful condition and how much, you know, we need a savior to reconcile our own condition, and how important Christ is. And how much, you know, how far we are separated from God, in the sense that, you know, when we sin, we have fallen short of his glory. You know, talking about these things is important because I think it will open up our eyes to just how important it is to recognize that Christ is the only thing that can save us, you know, and relying on his grace and his mercy to save us. You know, we tend to think that we can work our way to him. And I think this is one of the talking points also when you're talking to people from different walks of religion. This puts Christ out there in a totally different category. This is what
it
makes
does.
Christ so unique.
Yeah.
So in other religions where you have to work your way up to that God, or, you know, live to where you can meet the standard of that God, Christ came to us. and we didn't deserve that. And so that's what I took away from your conversation. This is an easy conversation to have, in the sense that you just put it out there. And so, I think what I get from you, and I think what a lot of my listeners probably struggle with, is they have a tendency to keep their beliefs quiet, or to just kind of like, this is what I believe, but I don't have to share that with other people. Maybe because of the fear of having a confrontational exchange, or, you know, losing your friends to share this. And you reached out to complete strangers at a lot of points and just said, hey, I just want to talk about these things. So what would you say to those who are on the sidelines right now that have not, they know that what they have is true and beautiful and unique, but they just don't know how to get the ball rolling. They don't know how to get these conversations started.
Yeah.
What would you say to encourage those people?
I would start with 2 Corinthians 13:5 that says, test yourself to see if you're in the faith. Ask your own self, on what basis do you believe God will or will not accept you? You have to understand the gospel yourself. It has to be good news to you, or you're not going to be able to make it good news to anybody else. And so that's one of the problems, is when Christians, I mean, I quote a stat in my TED Talk that from the Barna Group that shows that almost half the people who say they're Christian in the United States are appealing to their good works and not Jesus. That's, I mean, one out of every two. And so that's the first starting point, is you're not going to have an urgency. You're not going to have any motivation to share your faith unless you have that sense of gratitude and an understanding of the beauty of His grace. And then, you know, from there, when we're right on Jesus, then, yeah, how do we get these conversations? I have a talk that I do called Having Spiritual Conversations That Accomplish Something. And I share the illustration. I have this water cooler on the stage under a sheet. And I talk about how under this sheet is kind of an icon in our culture. Maybe not so much today as it used to be. Something that people gather around to have conversations. Now it's just, you know, coffee shops or whatever. But I unveil it, and it's this water cooler. And then I Google's image searched water coolers, water cooler conversations. And it's so fun to see just what comes up. There's little, you know, models of Lego men having conversations around a water cooler, and little Marvel comics, and people from The Office, you know, the TV show The Office. And so people gather around these water coolers on their breaks, and it just represents these spontaneous conversations. And in those conversations, people talk about their opinions, you know, politics and religion a lot of times. And those are heated topics that a lot of people are scared of. And in those spontaneous conversations, they're actually, you don't really make any progress. They're not really, you don't really accomplish anything in those spontaneous conversations.
Yeah.
And while we are told in Peter, you know, 1 Peter to be ready to give an answer for the hope that's in us, you know, I think there's some strategic, effective ways to do that. And so I would say to the Christian who shies away from those water cooler conversations, those swing it from the spontaneous conversation to the scheduled conversation, and say, like you said, Clark, say, hey, these are really good questions, and, you know, you're asking me what my opinion is. What do you say we meet up for coffee together, if you really want to know my perspective? And I'd really love to hear more about what you think. And now we've taken it out of that kind of intimidating situation where there's other people breathing down our neck and we're worried about saying the right thing. And now we're sitting face to face across from a coffee shop table. And we're just, it's more effective, you know? So I would definitely encourage those kind of conversations. You know, I think of Jesus at the well talking with the Samaritan woman. You know, that was a really good conversation. And then, you know, I love on your website, the mantra right at the top, it says, questioning is the first step towards solid faith.
Yeah.
I mean, I love questions. Jesus asks questions all the time. And so I would say just come up with some good questions that you want to ask people.
Yeah.
And one of the questions that I share in my TEDx talk is what I call the hypothetical question. So if someone asks me, what do you believe about fill in the blank?
Right.
It's like a topic, like God's existence, the Bible's reliability, you know. Or they'll ask about a lifestyle issue. What do you believe about, you know, abortion?
Yeah.
Whatever. So whether it's a belief or a lifestyle, people ask us, what do we believe? And I have found that it's really good for a good response is before you give your answer, kind of test their heart and ask them, what are you going to do with the answer?
Yeah.
In other words, hypothetically, if you had the answer to your question and it pointed to God, you know, if you searched the question of God's existence, hypothetically, and it pointed to God's existence, what would you do then?
Yeah.
If you were looking at the topic of abortion, and you were turning over every rock, and you were interviewing the experts, and you were digging into the science, and you found that actually, yeah, you know, this is wrong, and these are real people, what would you do then? Would that new knowledge, would that answer to your question change you?
Right.
Would it change your opinion? Would it change your submission to that truth?
Right.
And that is a real heart-testing question.
Yeah.
Sometimes people say, oh, I wouldn't believe it. I still wouldn't surrender my life to God. That response shows that they're really not interested in the answer, in the truth. There's something else holding them back, and that's the issue. And usually it comes back to some painful experience or just flat-out rebellion, you know? And so questions and hypothetical questions are really great. Like I say, people are articulating their thoughts, and it helps you discern the most appropriate starting point for helping them if they want to be helped.
Yeah.
And so, you know, in my talk when I said I don't have the answer for you, I was kind of emphasizing the word right now. This is the best time. And sometimes, yeah, I don't have the answer at all. We'll find it together. But you know, the story I told in the talk was, you know, at a wedding reception, the music's loud, people are dancing, the bride's about to toss the garter belt, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're not going to be able to answer the question, does God exist in a situation like that?
Yeah.
That's what I call a $1 million question.
Yeah.
And to try to answer it right there would be like a 10 cent answer.
Yeah. I want to shift the conversation a little bit. You know, I was listening to you talk here, you know, sharing these things. It goes back to your starting point, right? So we had Greg Kokel on the podcast, and he talked about these two really important questions to ask. You know, number one, what do you mean by that? Whenever you're talking to someone, if they make a claim, you know, about the gospel or their understanding of the gospel, ask them what they mean. And then number two, how did you come to that conclusion?
Yes.
And those two questions are just gut-wrenching because they pull at the heart of the starting point. And I think you pointed out something really good too. If this conversation leads back to God, if it points back to God in some way, would that change your perspective? You know, I've heard Frank Turek ask this question, if Christianity were true, would you believe it? And you'd be surprised that some people might actually look back and say no. And that tells you that the starting point's not necessarily truth. Now, if the person you're talking to says, "Yeah, you know, I would believe that," then you have a common starting point. It's they may not believe Christianity is true. They may not even believe in God at this point, but at least your starting point is we want to get to the truth. We want to talk about what's real, what's true, and that's a better place to start from. I think so many times we jump so far down the line in these conversations without considering our starting point. Are we really after the truth? And so these conversations that you've had, you really do that. I want to shift the conversation though, because you know some of the people that you've talked to come from a different religious background. They're not necessarily atheistic or agnostic. I know you've talked to a lot of atheists and agnostics, and we've talked a lot about that on our podcast. But those from an Eastern understanding of God, that conversation may look a little different in some ways. What does that look like when you present Christ to someone who has a Muslim background, for example, or a Buddhist background or a Hindu background, coming from an Eastern religion? How does that conversation look when you're modeling Christ to someone from the East?
Yeah, well, man, tell a quick story. One of the people I interviewed a Muslim professor, a Muslim student. The student and I went out to Indian Sizzler once in Delaware. It was the closest food to his food back at home. And we're talking, and I asked him a question. I said, "When you came to America, what were you expecting? What did you think Christians would be like?" And he said, "You know, honestly, I was kind of nervous and kind of scared, and my opinion was kind of bad and negative."
Yeah.
I said, "Well, how'd you arrive at that conclusion, really?"
Yeah.
"You know, what influenced that assumption?" He said, "Media."
Yeah.
And then he said, "How about you? When you think about Muslims, what comes to mind?" You know, and I said, "Well, historically, you know, I think I probably have some similar feelings about Islam than you expressed about Christianity." And he said, "Well, how did you come to that conclusion?" And I said, "Same as you." Mm. And I kid you not, it was unreal at that exact moment. When we both had just got done talking about how media influences our perspective on the TV behind us, it's just, you know, some sports game. And then all of a sudden this breaking news with some terrorism attack that involved Christians and Muslims.
Wow.
And him and I just looked at each other and shook our heads. And we were amazed at the irony. And so that was a really important moment for both of us to realize that we had some assumptions, some preconceptions, and we really just need to ask questions and be friends and let people be themselves. Let people show you who they are and what they believe.
Yeah.
Before you assume those things, before you start trying to answer questions they're not asking.
Yeah.
Yeah. But beyond that, you know, Clark, it's really pretty similar. Mm. You don't have to know everything about Islam to help a Muslim.
Yeah.
You don't have to know everything about a Buddhist or a Hindu to help them, or a Mormon.
Right.
Because what I have found is with that question, on what basis do you believe God will or will not accept you into heaven, hypothetically, if there is a heaven?
Yeah.
I'm telling you, 9 out of 10 people believe you got to be more good than you are bad.
Yeah.
And so even though this religion has their list of do's and don'ts, which pretty much everyone, there's an illustration I'm not going to share here because I do want people to get something out of my TED talk that I haven't shared here.
Yeah.
But I call it mountain theory. And it just talks about how, you know, everyone kind of agrees on the Ten Commandments, That's one way in which religions are very similar, but they are different in the particulars of, since we fall short of that, now what?
Yeah.
And, you know, this religion says, well, you got to do this. And this religion says, well, you got to do this. And so it really, while there's great value in learning about those religions, I personally have studied Mormonism quite a bit. Yeah. But, you know, Neil Qureshi's resources and Abdu Murray's resources on Islam are fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And they're so helpful and insightful. So I definitely encourage people to tap into the wealth of resources out there.
Yeah.
But to not be intimidated away from having conversations with people of different beliefs and backgrounds than ourselves, when we haven't taken an apologetics course, you know, it's just be the friend, ask the questions. And what I found is when you ask people questions about what they believe, they will often reciprocate and ask you questions about what you believe. And then they will share the questions they still have.
Yeah.
And so I love to help people prioritize their questions. One story I'll share with you was, there was a student in Arizona that I met for coffee, and she came and she just looked so frazzled, like she hadn't slept, and she was just a deep thinker.
Yeah.
And she said, I don't know how I would ever come to a confident belief about anything, because I don't have time to study every religion under the sun. You know, I don't have time to study it all and give it all an equal treatment.
Yeah.
And, you know, deep inside, when I'm being asked a question like that, part of me is like, oh, that's a good question. What am I going to say? And then part of me is just praying, you know, God, help me to have a good response.
Yeah.
And what came to me was, I said to her, okay, I got some homework for you. The first thing I want you to do is, between now and next week when we meet up again, get a little notebook and write down every single question that you have. And she's like, every question? You know, every question that's like an obstacle between you and this hypothetical God at the end of this journey.
Yeah.
And so she came back the next week and she's like, I don't know why you had me do that homework. I did it, but this is just, you know, case in point. You know, this is the evidence of what my feeling. I actually just feel worse now, because she's like turning page after page after page of questions. And they ranged from things like, do Adam and Eve have a belly button? You know, does God exist?
Yeah.
And I said, okay, here's why I had you do that. Because now I want you to prioritize those questions. And this is going to be tedious, because you're going to have to compare every question against every question and prioritize them in order of the importance of the answer. So, for example, does Adam and Eve had a, did they have belly buttons? Curious question, but you know, you can know God without that answer.
Yeah.
So that goes on the bottom of the list. But does God exist? That's probably on the top of the list. So she went home and she did it. She prioritized her questions. And it, again, it was those top five were the typical, you know, does God exist? Has God spoken? You know, has he revealed himself? How can we know God? And then, you know, is the Bible accurate, reliable history? And, you know, did Jesus resurrect from the dead? Or, you know, what's different about him than other religions and their leaders?
Yeah.
And then I had her take a pen. So she's got her list. And it's just list, her bullet point. There's probably like 100 questions. And I said, take your pen. And I want you to go down the list of your questions and ask yourself at each one, could I hypothetically have a personal relationship with God without this question being answered? And so she's like, no, I got that one. That one is crucial. She went to the next one. No, I need the answer to that one. You know, and then at some point there's like this gray area. You're like, well, you know, could I really know God and not have the answer to that? And then eventually, only 4 or 5 questions in out of like 100 said, when you get to the point where you think you could know God without the answers to everything that comes next, draw a line. And now you've just given your permission, yourself permission, to put all this other stuff on the shelf.
Yeah.
And not let it make you feel like this is an impossible feat.
Yeah.
Like there's no way, you know, to think you have to have 100 answers.
Yeah.
You just reduced 100 questions to 5.
Yeah.
That's more doable. That's less daunting.
Right.
And it was just like, wow, she was like, this is doable. And in her case, I gave her Mark Middleberg's book, Confident Faith,
yeah,
which is one of my favorites. She went home and read that like 2 times in a week. And she's like, and she lent it to her mom. She loved it. And she's like, yeah, I'm ready to cross the line.
Yeah.
And now I'll spend the rest of my life tackling all those other questions. They're important.
Yeah.
But, and so that was really helpful when it comes to like putting questions in perspective.
Mm.
So, you know, we don't have to agree with people on a lot of things under that line.
Right. Yeah. You know,
we approach it like, as if we do.
Right. Yeah. I think a lot of people are held captive by, if I'm going to evangelize, I need to have it all figured out before I start having these conversations. And so what happens is we just kind of sit on the sidelines, because I don't know the answer to every question. I haven't studied every religion, and yet Christ is so unique and so different. And the message of Christianity is so different than anything else. I think if we as Christians could get the full revelation or understanding of just how unique it is to be a Christian, and maybe just understand, you know, Christ, you know, in a much more unique way, then you don't have to be an expert in anything else. You just sit down and say, here's what the gospel message has to offer you. And I think what the gospel offers is meaning and beauty and things that no other religion has been able to capture, because our God wants a personal relationship with us. And it's so different than me trying to elevate myself to have a relationship with him. He came for me. That's different than anything else. And so, yeah, when you start prioritizing the questions, it changes the conversation. And I think a lot of Christians are just scared of having these conversations because they don't have all the answers, when in all reality, it comes down to the most simple questions and the starting point, and just going right back to that starting point. You know, what if I could share something with you that would give you more meaning and purpose to your life? And so it really goes back to that. And I think also the thing that I took away from your TED talk was there's not enough Christians who understand these things. And, you know, you're talking to non-believers and people of different backgrounds and different religious backgrounds, but you also were kind of astounded at what Christians thought about their own message. So if we don't clearly understand the gospel, if we don't understand just how important it is that we rely on Christ, then for sure we're not going to be able to present a beautiful, clear message of the, you know, the Christian faith. And so that really stood out to me as well.
Yeah. You know, some people that I asked that question, who are church-going people,
yeah,
they'll say, you know what? I do believe I've put my faith in Jesus, even though I had the wrong answer. But this helps me be that much more intentional, that I consider how I'm being perceived. Like if you listen to the average testimony given at a church or a conference or a summer camp, a lot of times it's like, let me tell you how bad of a person I was.
Yeah.
Then let me tell you, you know, I went to church where I met this friend, or I had a near-death experience, or I got out of jail. And then now, let me tell you who I've become. You know, I went to Celebrate Recovery, and I, you know, poured, you know, all my alcohol down the drain, and my flushed all my drugs, and, you know, broke up with that person. And, you know, here I am today, full of hope and purpose. And what's amazing is, as inspiring as that talk is, so often they fail to mention Jesus in the testimony.
Yeah.
And so if you put yourself in the shoes of the people in the audience, what are you going to think? Oh, man, yeah, my life's pretty hard, too. And, man, I want what he has. I want what she has. So I need to get some good friends. I need to go to church. And I need to be a better person. If he can do it, I can do it.
Yeah.
And again, you miss Jesus.
Yeah.
So yeah, a lot of people have said, you know, this has helped me be more emphatic about Jesus. And so, you know, I was thinking back, one of the things when I was talking about Mark Middleberg's book and your question about helping people from the East, or just, you know, very different worldviews than our own. When you ask questions and they ask questions and you prioritize those questions, then it's fun if the person's willing, they really have a seeking heart to know what's true. It's fun to just tackle the questions above that line that stand between them and God, and just tackle them one at a time, go at their pace, utilize great resources like, you know, Confident Faith or Mary Jo Sharp's book, Wise to Believe, and, you know, Be He, and just all these great things out there, Strobel.
Yeah.
And, you know, what I love about J. Warner Wallace's book, Cold Case Christianity, is very similar to Middleberg's book, Confident Faith. Middleberg talks about the arrows of truth, and Jim Wallace talks about building a cumulative case. It's right. The same concept, only his is described as, you know, in his detective background. It's the same concept. Is when you're building a case for something, it's accumulation of many arguments that are piling up.
Yeah.
So I think what Christians often do, what I used to do, is I would present an argument, and we do one of two things. We either make too much out of one argument, or we make too little out of one argument. When we make too much of something, it's like we say, let me tell you about archaeology. Like, doesn't that prove it? That just proves everything, right? And your friend's like, well, that was pretty fascinating, but, you know, I think you're making too much out of that. It doesn't prove everything. I still have all these questions, you know? And so then when the Christian has made too much of that one point, we swing that pendulum. We think, oh, man, well, if that didn't prove it last time I ever talk about archaeology, that would make too little of that one point. But the cumulative case is, hey, archaeology and messianic prophecy and the fine tuning of the universe, you know, and we just build this case. It's like, wow, that's a solid case. Look at all these amazing reasons that we have to believe God exists, to believe we can trust the Bible, to believe Jesus rose from the dead. And so I love how Middleberg says, hey, if you're going to reject that, once you see all these incredible reasons to believe, if you're going to reject it, you kind of have a twofold responsibility here. First of all, you got to refute all those arrows of truth. And secondly, if you're going to be honest and consistent and responsible, you have to present another worldview that has a better explanation, that has arrows of truth, and build a cumulative case for that alternative worldview that makes more sense than the one you're rejecting. And that's very challenging for people.
Mm-hmm.
So I just love that idea of building a cumulative case and offering one argument at a time, going at people's pace, And from my experience, you know, when you're reading a book with somebody and you're tackling their question and going at their pace, going as deep as they need to go, eventually it gets to the point where like, man, this caught me by surprise. You know, this really makes a lot of sense. And I'm ready to tackle the next question.
Right.
And yeah. I'm ready to tackle the next question. And eventually they're like, hey, I have the answers now. And like I said from the beginning, I'm willing to go where the truth points. So let's cross this line of faith. Let's put my faith in Jesus and you know, be born again.
Yeah.
And so, man, one more thing that my TEDx talk ends with is putting good works in perspective. Because the Bible does have a lot to say about being good people.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's important to have the right context. Like Jesus, you know, my talk was originally entitled Jesus is Not a Role Model. And that they changed it on YouTube to Finding Meaning in Daily Acts of Good.
Yeah.
Anyway, you know, so I talk about how if we're talking about how to be forgiven and receive eternal life, Jesus is not the role model. He didn't come to show us how to get to heaven by our merits.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're talking about how our lives can be improved by following his teachings, then yeah, he is a role model.
Yeah.
But once he's been our Messiah first that we trust,
mm-hmm.
then he becomes the model that we follow. And when he is that model, we're trying to be like him, to treat people the way he treated them. And, you know, the Sermon on the Mount and all that we have taught from Jesus and his apostles, it's things that we do not to be forgiven, but because we're forgiven.
Yeah.
It changes the motive from fear and guilt to love and gratitude.
Right.
And it's just this light bulb moment, epiphany, that I've seen so many people experience. Like,
yeah.
Now I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Going to church now isn't to tilt a scale and score some points. It's because I love God. Because look what he did for me. How could I not go worship him? And all these other things that we should do is motivated by love.
Yeah, you know, I think when people in the Christian circles maybe debate or argue about what role works and grace and all these things play in, I think really it goes back to our starting point. It's like if Christ loves me, even in my sinful condition, was willing to die for me to atone for my sins, then why wouldn't I want to live a life, you know, a fruit of where I'm actually, you know, living a good life? I think once we get a revelation of just how much we didn't deserve the love that we've been given, it changes the way you live so that you are producing good things in your life. You are, you know, making changes. You are doing this. But getting that revelation of I can't be good enough. I can't be perfect enough. I can't reach some, you know, level of perfection. It's humbling because it makes sense that he loves me in spite of that. So why wouldn't I want to serve him with everything I've got and truly follow after him with every ounce of passion and give in every area of my life to the kingdom of God and give everything for that? So that's kind of what I took away from your talk. It's a good talk. I really hope that those who are listening will go check it out, and it will help those, especially on college campuses, to begin having these conversations. I would encourage people to get off the sidelines and get in the game and have these conversations. It doesn't have to go perfectly. There's going to be times where you don't have answers. There's going to be times where the conversation didn't go as planned. But get off the bench and try it out. And I think, like you said, it's an unexpected adventure. There were things that were unexpected that came out of this. And I think that people need to hear that and understand that there's going to be some things that you didn't see coming that are really great and that bless your life and that change your life once you start having these conversations. Yeah, so Tyler, before you go, where can our listeners find you? And I'm going to link up your TED Talk, but you mentioned your nonprofit that you work for. So maybe you want to plug that one more time so listeners can find that as well.
Yeah, for people who want to reach the foreigners in our land, like the Bible says to, check out Let's Start Talking at lst.org and consider going on a trip overseas or doing Friend Speak, or you can do that right on your campus or in your community through your church. And then I have a website called btylerellis.com, and my TEDx talk is on there as well. And I have a speaker kit. I like to speak at places and stuff. And also, B. Tyler Ellis is my handle on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and whatever. You can find me there, too.
Awesome. Okay. Well, man, thanks for coming on. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I pop a willy and move. I pop a willy and move. I pop a willy and move it. Continuous will of my music. Gassed up, you get passed up if you talk down.